Welcome to episode 24 of Physicians Beyond the Bedside. For this episode, I welcome to my show two physician leaders that are collaborating in a new venture, Dr. Tom Davis and Dr. John Jurica. I'm so excited to have them as guests on my show. They have a tremendous wealth of knowledge and insight to share with all of you. Both Tom and John have taken different roads to this current collaboration. Both are family physicians. Tom has expertise in value-based healthcare and full-risk insurance contracting, telehealth, and now coaching physicians transforming their lives. John moved from his clinical practice in family medicine into hospital administration. He will talk a little bit about that journey on the show today. From there, he went into podcasting and now coaching. John has released 235 episodes of his podcast, Physician Non-Clinical Careers with John Jurica, as of this recording. You will learn more about their passion for their new project during our conversation in the show. I'm sure that you will find this conversation and this show very enlightening and very inspiring as you contemplate your own transition and transformation to a role beyond the bedside. Hello and welcome to another episode of Beyond the Bedside. I am your host, Dr. Norm Chapin. Beyond the Bedside is a podcast that will help you find a non-clinical role and take your career in new, rewarding, and sometimes unanticipated directions. I'm very happy that you are here to learn about opportunities beyond the bedside. Welcome to another episode of Physicians Beyond the Bedside. This is your host, Norm Chapin. Today, I'm very excited to have two fantastic guests with me, Dr. John Jurica and Dr. Tom Davis. Gentlemen, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Norm.
Thank you for having us.
Well, thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedules and joining me. I'd kind of like to start the interview process today with both of you sort of helping me understand the nature of your collaboration and the work that you're doing together, when that started and what you hope to gain from this and what value it's going to offer your tribe, so to speak.
Well, I guess I'll go first. And then Tom, you can correct me. We are both interested in helping support, encourage, mentor, teach physicians because we see physicians, and actually now we've extended to other clinicians as well, but healthcare workers in general have just been abused lately. And this goes back even before the pandemic. I mean, we all know about burnout. That term was coined more than 10 years ago. And, you know, up to 50% of physicians we know have symptoms of burnout or, you know, complaints of burnout symptoms. And I'm sure other clinicians, it's the same thing. So in both of our own ways, we've been trying to help physicians who want to make a transition or start consulting or do a new business or become a leader or something like that. And then a few years ago, we got together because we both had the same interests. And we saw that the current, you know, methods like Facebook and LinkedIn and so forth weren't being all that effective. And so that's when we decided to get together and figure out what we could do.
Okay.
John and I should be adjunct professors at a local medical schools. And in another world, you know, that's what we would be. But really, those opportunities are not out there anymore for mentoring and modeling for clinicians or healthcare professionals, the different paths that they can take. And so that was part of our project, is to create an environment where the old style mentor relationship can take root and can be nurtured, as well as simply an aspirational situation where you, as a healthcare professional who is seeking, can see others that you can say, hey, they're just like me, and they've really done it. Let me do it. Because as you know, role modeling is so important in any kind of behavioral change. And so that's why we came up with the environment that we did. I must say that John's passion is very infectious. And when you connect that kind of with that kind of passion, boy, it really gets the creative juices flowing.
So you've been working together for a couple of years. I guess I just became aware of the collaboration probably within the last 6 months as you rolled out the new community platform and that type of thing. And Tom, as I looked at your background, I guess I was interested as to how you transitioned from the value-based care consulting and coaching that you were doing into the role of coach and mentor, helping physicians try to find their path in a non-clinical arena.
Back in 2012, my partners and I sold our health system that we owned to a regional competitor for enough money to become financially secure. But I quickly realized that I was not a good fit with that particular organization. And I had all of this expertise in value-based care. So I started doing business consulting. Okay. And I really got hit in the face with just how fortunate that I was to have been in my position. I went across the country and I engaged with clinicians across all specialties, across all different employment models, and they're just absolutely miserable, not just miserable, but all pathologic. And I came across some venture capital folks who I rubbed elbows with, and they found out that at that time they were getting ready to broaden telemedicine prescriptive authority across the states. They're going to throw some money across the state legislators. And it seemed to me that would be a perfect way to bridge people from being miserable to a second career, because one of the greatest barriers is how am I going to make a living, you know, as I make a transition. So I created that model as just kind of a service to the clinicians out there that needed it. I was impressed with the demand for my services in terms of coaching folks. It was absolutely overwhelming and, frankly, quite humbling. So I still do the business consulting, but this is my service aspect, since I had a sense of loss from losing the in-person kind of comprehensive family medicine clinic that I'd been in for 25 years. This was an excellent substitute, an excellent way to serve.
So when did you take that pivot? And it sounds like you're still doing some business consulting, obviously, but when did you pivot to focus more on helping physicians find the transition into non-clinical roles beyond the telemedicine opportunity that you described?
Well, that comes with connecting with John, who just has a tremendous network and a wide area of expertise, because telemedicine is, for most people, just a bridge. A few people that I mentor, 10 to 15%, they actually get into it full time, and that actually percentage is growing. But everybody's different. Everybody has different aspirations. And so as I connected with John, I just saw the incredible breadth of relationships, and true value, true wealth in this world comes from relationships. And I was just very intriguing that if we could create an environment where we connect seekers with that breadth of expertise, that would be an incredibly powerful tool. And to do it, you know, outside of the other social media networks where they sell your information to anybody, that kind of put the icing on the cake.
So John, talk to me a little bit about your transition. I know you've had a variety of roles and you went through a non-clinical transition into healthcare leadership, maybe a little bit differently than Tom did on the business side. What was the impetus or the passion that drove you into this area of helping physicians make these non-clinical transitions?
Well, part of it was I had made the transition, so I understood what it was like to want to make the transition. And for me, it was probably similar to, I think, 60 or 70% of the physicians I talked to. And that was, there are certain things about patient care that I was starting to hate, which it's not a good reason to leave necessarily on its own. But I was always interested in joining. I was always interested in helping, you know, support projects, to lead projects. You know, I think I was in practice 2 years. I became a chair of a committee, and I, you know, joined the hospital board after about 5 or 6 years, just because I was always involved. Mm-hmm. And so I became just more and more interested in moving into a position in the hospital where I could help lead really big projects. And I ended up, you know, as the CMO and, you know, like overseeing a division with anywhere from 6 to 8, you know, medical directors, and budgets had varied from, you know, 10 million up to 30 or 40 million, depending on who was reporting to me. And then I got this idea after doing that for 14 years that I wanted to open an urgent care center. And so when I did that, it actually freed up some of my time. I became interested in blogging and podcasting. And so that's when I really thought, okay, I want to spend more time both learning about non-clinical careers, because I had done a few, but I knew there were dozens and dozens out there at that point. That's why I started the podcast, actually, was to interview people that were doing these things, and then try to leverage that to help other physicians to make their transition if they felt that was the way to go. You know, I definitely want there to be physicians out there practicing, taking care of me, my family, and all of us. But, you know, there's no point in being miserable in your job. And there are so many awesome jobs that physicians can do based on their background, their knowledge of the healthcare system, their knowledge of medicine, that I'm just driven to do that.
When you started podcasting, when you were working in urgent care, did you immediately gravitate towards this non-clinical transition realm that you're in right now? Were you podcasting about clinical topics initially?
No, I went straight into the non-clinical. So I was blogging. It was kind of fun. I like to write, but I thought I really got intrigued by podcasts. I was listening to a lot of podcasts. I was learning from podcasts. I did. I put it together. I said, well, I'd like to do a podcast, but you know what? I want to learn about non-clinical careers by doing the podcast. So from day one, that was the focus of the podcast.
Gotcha. And what year did you actually start the podcast again?
It was in 2017.
Okay. And Tom, did you ever use podcasting or blogging as a significant avenue to reach out to people when you were doing your consulting?
So blogging was my key tactic, and I started out for several years blogging every day, and that was very revealing. The highs are highs, the lows are lows, and the slog is the slog. But then I get people that contact me and they say, oh, I love your blog. Just recently, I had one client contact me, and he said, I have read every word that you have ever written. I'm your biggest fan. It's like, okay, well, that's good. And that's why one of the things that we talk about on the community is putting content out there, whether or not your heart's podcasting or with writing, mm-hmm. just putting it out there on a consistent basis to build trust so that you can find the people that need to hear your story because you're the only person that can help them.
So let's go back and talk a little bit about the community, because I think that's a pretty new venture for the two of you, and it seems pretty exciting. I've known other groups and other people who've moved away from Facebook communities, and you mentioned a few of the reasons that seems like a good idea. How did you decide to launch the community? How did you decide on which vendor to use to launch the community? And what are the goals that you have for that community over the next 12 to 24 months?
I'd like to hear what John has to say about that.
Oh, I was just going to let you talk about it. You were instrumental in the platform, which I think you, well, I'll let you explain how you found the platform that we use. We had been working together for a while. We'd actually tried another approach, but part of my background that kind of applies to this is I was the admin for a Facebook group. I didn't start the Facebook group. You may be aware of the group. Anyway, it was full of physicians, you know, that were not happy and they were looking for non-clinical career. It's a physician non-clinical career hunters group. It's actually owned or run by McLean, Dr. Laura McCain. But anyway, while I was in there, it went from around 4,000 members to about 16,000 over a period of 3 years that I was involved. And it was, you know, it was kind of awesome. It was interesting to see that there was that much interest, but I don't know if you've experienced this. There's no way to really find anything on a Facebook feed once it's a day or two old. I mean, unless somebody so-called bumps it up or something. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can search all day. It's just not that easy to use. So that was one thing that Tom and I discussed, that, you know, we wanted something that was a little different from a Facebook, and then the other reason. So that's what kind of drove us to wanting to do like a forum, but it's really more of a community with forum features, but we can post everything there. Not only like the daily, like emails that I post in there, written material, but videos, and could do live streams and all that. So we wanted something that had kind of multimedia approach, depending on what the members wanted, and the ability to really customize it over time. So those are the things that kind of drove me to it, and something simple and could be used on the phone, smartphone, because it seems like the younger generation doesn't really want to sit in front of a computer. So
yeah,
maybe Tom, you can add to that in terms of how we took that to where we are today.
Well, I'm not the younger generation and I don't like to sit in front of a computer either. So we decided on kind of the strategic plan. I want to make sure that anybody who's listening to this understands that we don't know what we're doing. Okay. This whole thing is one adventure in us not knowing the answer to questions. So we created a WordPress. It was a great WordPress forum. It was a great experience, but again, it wasn't really adaptable to mobile, and mobile is really where it's at. And we had worked with lots of great people doing that. And so then we dropped that and started looking for these communities. And really, Norm, the mega trend here is away from Facebook. It's away from Twitter. It really is to very, very focused communities where they're for usability and for control of data privacy. There are any number of these different platforms out there that offer a skeleton that you can impress upon. And we simply went through a systematic selection process, interviewed and picked Disciple, who is our partner. And we've been up now for about 3 months. We are still learning all the functionalities. We're still learning what to do. But the overall principles seem to be pretty straightforward, which is do the same thing as John does on his podcast and I did with my blog, which is to post regularly, mm-hmm. engender trust, and create an environment where people feel comfortable exploring. And so far, I mean, the demand has far outstripped whatever we expected in the first 3 months.
Well, I've enjoyed it tremendously. I signed up when you first pushed it out to start following it. And it's kind of nice when I'm sitting in my office and I have a break for a minute and just click in and see what you're up to. I get notified when you're doing a live stream or when you've posted something. And in just a few minutes, I can kind of get a sense of what you're doing. And it's been fun to use it. And having access to it, as you said, from a phone when I'm out and about doing my role, or even when I'm at home on the weekends and I get these notifications, it really does connect me to that. And it was fascinating to see how often I was moving into it and taking a look at what you've been up to. So I've enjoyed it. And I think it is a great opportunity, and for the reasons that you mentioned. So did you find that most of the people who were connected with you in your Facebook group, or John, who had been working with you on Dr. McCann's site, did you find that you were connecting with new people, or that you were converting a lot of your existing connections into this new platform?
You know, it's hard to tell. I think the majority were either coming from my podcast or getting my emails, because I was actively, you know, recruiting them in. I've not done a lot of promotion in the Facebook group itself, because I really didn't want to step on the main owner of that, her toes, although we collaborate quite a bit. In fact, she's been on my podcast and is coming back on again. And I'm putting some of the live streams that I've been recording for the NewScript members onto the Facebook. So we'll get the word out in a more subtle way. But there's a group of physicians out there that are just interested in this, and some of them are quite desperate in a way. And so they will, you know, try anything that might give them a step up to, you know, finding a solution to their burnout or to the next career.
Another interesting thing that we found is there's international interest in this. Well, we have some subscribers from New Zealand, we have some subscribers from Europe, from Canada. And when we first started, we got picked up by a group of Malaysian physicians. They went on Facebook to say, hey, you got to check this out. And suddenly we had like 16 Malaysian physicians sign up, you know, one right after another. And then last week I had one of my TikTok videos go mini viral, which means that you go to this kind of the second level of distribution, and suddenly we get all these nurses on there, because it's not just for clinicians, it's for any licensed healthcare professional. And suddenly we get all these nurses pop up there. So in teeny tiny ways, you know, we're exploring different ways of making this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of the dream/nightmare we're facing is that John or I somehow hit the jackpot on social media, and suddenly we log on and there's, you know, 5,000 new members. Oh my God. What have we done?
You mentioned that you're attracting not just physicians now, you're seeing nurses and other healthcare professionals come in. Was that something that you anticipated, number one, that you designed your content for, or are you having to pivot to design content specifically for those subgroups of new people coming onto the community?
Well, when we started, we planned to invite all of the licensed healthcare professionals, you know, the people we typically work with, as well as dentists, podiatrists, and anesthetists, you name it, who have been through very similar experiences. So that was designed in. I will say that, you know, since my focus has been completely on physicians for so long, I have to remind myself, okay, keep this open, make it more general. And so we're doing things to definitely attract more of the non-physicians. And part of that is we're in the process of, over time, creating groups, you know, that are subgroups within the community, and then also bringing on, we call them mentors or faculty or experts, because Tom and I don't know everything, you know, and clearly we're not experts on the issues that nurses deal with or podiatrists or what have you. So we're actively getting people, kind of vetting them first, you know, giving them a chance to come on in and share. And then over time, it'll expand to include those people. The thing is, there's so much that's common to all of us. A lot of what I talk about in terms of career transition is true for any professional. There's specific things that are true for physicians versus nurses versus psychologists, but there's so much that also overlaps. That's one of the reasons we decided we should do it for all these different groups.
There is a universality as the employment model, as healthcare consolidation has left the employment model as by far the dominant model. All licensed professionals play the same role in that system. And so we have a tremendous amount of commonalities. And it's amazing, as you reach out across other social media networks, how common those commonalities are. And so we're able to do that. And then the kind of extra 20% that deals with specific licensure issues, we're working on looking for transition professionals in those specific spaces that'll come on and serve the community. It's definitely a journey, but there's definitely a need.
Thank you for sharing that. I have a special offer for you today. I have created a list of the top 10 leadership skills physicians need to develop to be maximally effective in leadership roles. The skills I included on the list have been studied and have been found to increase the effectiveness of leaders in any organization. You definitely need to cultivate and develop these skills to increase your effectiveness when assuming a leadership role. Physicians, of course, are leaders at the bedside in clinical or in non-clinical settings. These skills will benefit you whether you are at the bedside or beyond. Please visit my website, physiciansbeyondthebedside.com/top10leadership skills, for your copy of this resource today. I will also include a link to this resource in my show notes. You can simply click on that to receive your free copy. I'd like to ask you a little bit right now. The rate at which people are dissatisfied with traditional, maybe I shouldn't even use the word traditional, but you mentioned the employment model in healthcare right now and how pervasive it is, especially for physicians, nurse practitioners, physician assistants. We're seeing high levels of burnout. The suicide rates are significant and have really been significant for years, but I think the COVID pandemic, I'm hearing more stories about those types of tragic endings to professional careers. How do you, as you're coaching physicians, we're obviously seeing a large number of physicians who want to have more control over their practice, who want more control over their lives, basically. And I'm just wondering, are you working more with physicians to try to reestablish that joy of practice? Or do you find that most physicians really have already, by the time they reach out to you, they've come to the conclusion that their career as a clinician is just really not salvageable?
Well, you know, that there's a broad spectrum there. Clearly, there is a mismatch between the personal mission of the licensed professionals that are entering, that work in the healthcare system, and the healthcare system itself. Its own goals are very much mismatched with the professionals. And when you get that, obviously you get disengagement and burnout and depression, depending on a person's specific situation. Our goal here is to provide an environment where people can explore whether or not they still have the passion for patient care or not. And if they do, what are the clinical alternatives working outside the employment system that are available to them? And that's part of what we do. I mean, there's a misunderstanding in some of the other folks that have interviewed us. You know, we're not trying to drive people out of clinical medicine. I mean, all three of us are going to need doctors pretty soon. What we're trying to do is help these folks recreate their passion, recapture their passion. And sometimes, you know, their experience has really just sucked them dry and they just don't have any more patient care in them. That's fine. But they have just a tremendous amount of expertise and experience that can contribute to the system, that can contribute to healthcare, that is absolutely necessary. And for those that still have that passion, then they need to know it's okay to go cash pay or go concierge or go to telemedicine or create their own independent contractor practice, because there is zero modeling out there at all. And we go into the reasons for that on our platform. So they just need a space to see that modeled. Really, it's obvious that no one is going to help healthcare professionals except the healthcare professionals themselves. And so we have created a space to do that.
Great. John, what are your thoughts?
Well, I want to maybe share a couple of observations. One which kind of blew me away is that there's a certain percentage of residents now who are burned out. And they graduate and then they get into a clinical setting and they're burned out immediately. They start burned out and they stay burned out. I mean, I couldn't fathom that could happen, because there's usually this kind of lull that happens for a while where they give you a chance to ramp up, but apparently not so much in some institutions and some settings. So that's one. On the other hand, and this is all anecdotal, but I cannot believe the number of physician coaches and experts and consultants, actually like Tom, who are teaching other physicians how to just get out of the corporate style medicine, if that's kind of one term for it, you know, being an employee and just being, you know, that cog in a wheel or whatever. And so I'm hopeful. I think it'll be measurable soon that there's going to be an uptick in the DPCs and the cash only and the concierge. And the other thing I was blown away with the other day is I was interviewing somebody and she was working concierge medicine in corporate medicine. In other words, her large system is doing concierge medicine and giving basically the best providers, I should say medical providers or practitioners, the opportunity to actually do concierge medicine. And she loves it. And she's a leader at that organization as well. So we're trying some new things. And I'm hoping things shift back away from employment over time.
I was at SEEK several years ago as a faculty member, and I had a medical student come up to me and become a coaching client. And that really shook me. That was before I met John. Mm-hmm. And that really shook me. To have your passion sucked out so early in the training process was really striking. And since that time, we have any number of students, medical students, that reach out to me on TikTok. This is where I touch that talk about, you know, what can I, everyone's miserable. I don't want that to be me. What can I do without a residency? And John has a great deal of information about careers that are available without putting yourself through a residency.
Yeah, I met a physician the other day who left medical school, never went to his residency, was very well-trained in information technology, and he's now working for an organization in the IT department, but he never got licensed and never completed his residency. Ran into another physician who's now in a residency, but he took about a five-year hiatus to work in an IT company and decided that he needed to complete his residency. And so after a four-year hiatus, he applied and got accepted. But his plan is to really transition relatively rapidly into a chief medical informatics officer role rather than spending a lot of time in practice. But he found that he needed to have that clinical basis, at least of the residency, in order for him to be considered for some of the positions. And as I'm coaching him, I think it's going to be interesting to see how quickly that transition will be allowed to happen, how quickly and how much clinical experience will IT companies expect him to have. A lot of the jobs I see are, they recommend at least 5 years of clinical experience, but it'll be interesting to see whether his IT background helps him overcome that barrier and make a more rapid transition. So, but it is happening never happened when we were finishing our residency programs. I don't remember it, at least, as being that pervasive as it is today.
So, Norm, what we're seeing is the consolidation of healthcare that started back with the ACA, moving now down through the training programs and the medical schools. So those same organizations now are using their resources to consolidate those. You know, you go into medical school with certain expectations. Certainly, you want to, you know, get a return on your investment, but there's also passion and fun and curiosity and excitement. And what you're seeing is a certain amount of grooming into a specific set of hoops and a almost systematic removal of demonstrating options for those students. And the ones that are more perspicacious than others are seeing that, and they're saying, well, this is not going to serve my needs. I'm already deep in debt. What else can I do? And, you know, there are alternatives out there, because when you don't have alternatives, then you start doing substance abuse or thinking about hurting yourself. And boy, life is too short to live somebody else's dream.
Totally agree. So besides the community that you have, which I think is very cool, what other types of coaching are you finding most successful right now for physicians who are looking at these transitions? Do you find that individual sessions are more attractive, or group sessions, masterminds, that type of thing?
I'll tell you my experience. I don't do a lot of one-on-one coaching at all. I've kind of stayed away. It's very labor intensive, but there are plenty of awesome physician coaches, you know, and consultants kind of like Tom, but you know, they're classic names out there. They've been around for, you know, 10 years or more. And there's many more. Coaching by physicians for physicians is very interesting, because physicians get like all the positives by coaching and none of the negatives of the liability and the call. So it's a very attractive opportunity for physicians looking for a non-clinical way to make a living. I'm intrigued by masterminds. I love masterminds. I've participated in them in the past, and that's my focus. I have a mastermind that I do through non-clinical physicians, and it's just fun to get a group of physicians together, support one another, challenge one another, keep each other accountable. And they come in all shapes and sizes. You know, people I've talked to before, my particular approach is every couple of weeks for 3 or 4 months, we get together and get on the hot seat. So that's what I've been seeing. Tom, I don't know what your experience has been.
I come to it from a completely different place, which is why we work so well together, because we're very complementary. I do one-on-one coaching. My engagements are generally a year, because it takes that long for these engagements to start working out. It's primarily to use telemedicine as a bridge. And I'm talking about my personal physician coaching services. And I generally try to keep it to about a dozen that are active at any given time, simply because of my other responsibilities. And the excitement that I see is once the first couple of months is over and there's a plan and they see the forward motion, the seeing that excitement that there's another path forward kind of reawaken their passion, that is very gratifying to see. And I really enjoy it. You know, John and I, again, one of the reasons why we created the platform was to create a one-to-many kind of conduit for our expertise. Mm-hmm. We can't offer direct coaching to everybody that needs it, obviously. There's just tons of great coaches out there. All of them couldn't provide the bandwidth that's needed. So we're creating kind of a one-to-many conduit so people can at least get some value from our expertise.
So one of the things I was also interested in is this issue of coaching certification. And are physicians who are looking for a coach really looking for someone who's a certified coach, or are they making decisions based on other factors in your experience?
I've never had someone tell me that use that as a number one priority in terms of choosing a coach, although I do think being certified from one of the large national organizations is a plus. I think most people make their choice, at least that I can tell, and it's, I think, a wise way to do it. That's through referrals. And at least if not getting a direct referral from a former coachee, to at least get on a call and just see how things go on an introductory call and kind of sort through that and be ready to pull the plug in after a few meetings if it doesn't work out. So to me, it's more about reputation, experience, and, you know, referrals. And yeah, that's it.
Yeah, the big challenge of career transition is going from an environment where you basically slide on your credentials into an environment where you slide on the value that you create your quote unquote customers, whether or not that's your new boss at your health system or at the pharmaceutical firm or going out and doing consulting. You're really getting paid less on credentials. Credentials get you through the door, but you're getting paid based on value. Whereas, you know, within the healthcare system, you're paid based on your credentials. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I am not certified, and that was a conscious decision that I made because my thesis is that as people working outside the system, they need a kind of a comprehensive reset of their mindset, and that credentials just, you know, are less important in that. All that said, I know people come to me, they obviously don't care about credentials because I'm not a credentialed coach. I've never had anyone say, oh, I can't use you because you're credentialed. It is all about the connection and honing your skills in terms of coaching as opposed to getting that piece of paper. That's the difference that I have seen.
Was there a particular non-certification pathway that you took to hone the skills, or was it just through practicing and doing the coaching?
I used the basic skills, you know, that I had from being a clinician. Mm-hmm. And then I picked three different coaches and engaged with them as a client and basically learned in a kind of a master apprentice relationship. I really didn't have to do three. I could have just picked one and gone with it, but because I had, you know, never done this particular thing. And, you know, I was always worried if I screwed up, boy, I might be, somebody might say, okay, I'm going to try Tom. And that's, after that, I'm going to hurt myself. So I wanted to respect the role that I was going to play. So I basically used a master apprenticeship approach.
Okay. So I'd like to pivot now a little bit and talk back into the point in your careers in which you both were making decisions to transition into a non-clinical role. A lot of my audience are physicians who are still working at least part-time clinically, who are trying to decide whether to go from a full-time to part-time or part-time to fully non-clinical. You both have been in non-clinical roles for quite some period of time. Tom, you've been doing value-based care and consulting and are now pivoting into the coaching, obviously, for several years. And John, I know you had healthcare administration leadership roles for quite a while before you pivoted into this role. Can you both talk to me a little bit about what factors were important to you as you made those transitions and what types of things you think would be important for physicians who are considering that to take into consideration?
I guess I'll start. If you're looking at leadership positions in the hospital, I can speak to that, you know, quite a bit. There's a lot to cover on that, but the basics is this. To me, the way I did it was I became involved early on in anything that I could that made sense, that didn't take too much time out of my practice, whether that was committees, joined boards. I was on the hospice board. I was on the public health board for a while. Took on, you know, when the hospital needed someone to do something as a medical director, took on those roles part-time, gradually increased my time. Along the way, joined the AAPL, American Association for Physician Leadership. I've been with them since 93. I love the organization. I'm not really officially representing them, but I will say anyone who's interested in hospital leadership should definitely join the AAPL. There's just so many resources, one of which is resources on how to coach. Anyway, as I moved into my role at the hospital, I just slowly, gradually reduced my patient time and increased my administrative time. And yeah, just do those things. I picked up a master's in public health along the way. It's not really a leadership degree or a business degree, but there's a lot in it that applies. And then also through the APL, got the certification as a physician executive, which is basically you need some degree, MPH, MBA or something like that, get that background knowledge. And then you have to demonstrate at least a year of management and leadership on the job work. And so that's what I would recommend to people thinking about going into hospital admin as non-clinical. And then you decide whether you want to see patients or not. Most have the opportunity to still see patients part-time if they want. Some don't. I didn't really want to. I completely stopped seeing patients for 4 years. So I just felt like I wanted to focus on the administrative aspects.
Great. Thank you.
During my transition into business consulting, I did a deep dive into the sociology of business, about how business systems work. And there was really no degree program for that. I just had to start reading. I mean, I started with doing a study of The Prince by Machiavelli and going on and looking at The Science of Influence and Persuasion and looking at the different business books. And really, I came to an appreciation about how forcefully our training and our health system, our practice, has really socialized us physicians into a specific mindset where it's very difficult to entertain alternatives. And, you know, once I started realizing that, boy, the scales fell through from my eyes. And I realized that there's different ways that we can go ahead and really experience the fullness of life through using our licensures in different ways, using our experience in different ways. But a primary barrier is our socialization, the way that we as clinicians really are forced to walk on one specific path, and that we're made to feel that things aren't quite right if we deviate from that path. And that is very, very powerful influence, almost to the point where I would call from the beginning, day one of our training, that we're groomed for it. And certainly this current generation of clinicians are absolutely getting groomed into the employment model. And once you start looking at it this way, and then you realize that you have the will and the desire to break away from that, then you take action. And you know, what is that action? Well, really the right action to take if you're looking at that is any action. So movement begets movement, action begets action. Just start doing something. And I tell my the people that I work with to read the book Transitions, Making Sense of Life's Changes. 12 million people have read it, and it's a powerful tool. And it's kind of the first step to helping you realize how we have been influenced in becoming who and what we are, and that there are other ways. And we're all talented and gifted enough to create the life that we want to lead.
Great. Thank you both. Well, we're kind of approaching the end of the show here. I really appreciate all of your insights and recommendations. I'll make sure I include some of those, or all of those actually, in the show notes. Are there any other links that would be helpful for my listeners? I know obviously I'll link out to the community and to your LinkedIn pages, your websites, and that type of thing. Are there any other specific sites that you would think? And I know, John, you mentioned the AAPL. I'll include a link to them as well.
Well, there are sites, there are others like us who dedicate their lives to supporting physicians, at least in their non-clinical endeavors. So I just doing a search, and, you know, for example, a friend of ours named Heidi Moad has one called nonclinicaldoctors.com, I think is her website. And there are others. Beyond that, I think if you have a particular interest that's non-clinical, if you decide you're going to do something part-time or full-time, there's a professional organization for almost everyone. And that's the quickest way. For example, if you want to become an MSL, there's the MSL Society. Mm-hmm. You know, there's an organization just like we have organizations for clinicals. So just find one of those and join it and learn what you can. And if it aligns with you, great.
Great.
I encourage people to reach outside the typical medical resources as well. The gurus that I would recommend is looking at following Seth Godin for just not just marketing. He's not just a marketer. He actually helped you take forward progress, but also Scott Adams. You can get past the political stuff. His Science and Influence and Persuasion are great. And if you're looking at speaking, you can join a local Toastmasters club. Those are free, and it's a very powerful place to help you improve your communication skills. And then finally, check out the Dale Carnegie Institute. Their courses are absolute five diamonds. I mean, those people are Nazis about making sure that you get the highest pinnacle quality. And their How to Win Friends and Influence People course is a classic, and it is powerful. And the surprising thing is, if you're employed, a lot of your employers will help you pay for the course outside of your CME mm-hmm. budget. So that can be a very powerful path forward. Just do something.
Well, thank you both again for coming on the show. I really appreciate it. This has been great, and it met all of my expectations. This was absolutely what I was hoping to get for my listeners. So thank you both very much, and I appreciate you coming on the show.
Thank you.
And my pleasure.
That wraps up our show for today. Thank you for joining us. A special thanks to John and Tom for sharing their insights and expertise with all of us. The discussion today was very valuable, contained many great nuggets of information. More and more physicians are looking for opportunities to restore balance in their lives, both personally and professionally. Coaching can provide you with the insights you need to create your own path to a more meaningful and successful practice or career. John and Tom both stressed that the solution may be a different one for each individual physician. For some, a non-clinical career may be the answer. For others, a different type of practice may restore the balance between their professional and personal lives. I love the fact that John and Tom come to their collaboration from different backgrounds that complement each other and are creating a community for physicians to help each other learn, grow, and make desired transitions. I want to remind you that the top 10 leadership skills and attributes you can sharpen today remains available for you at my website, physiciansbeyondthebedside.com/top10leadership skills. I will include the link in the show notes for this episode. If you have any comments or questions, please feel free to add them in the comment section on the website. I love hearing from you, and I'm happy to answer any questions you may have. I included links in the show notes to Dr. Davis's and Jerika's LinkedIn pages. I've also included links to their websites, their new community, which is full of valuable information, and to Physician Non-Clinical Careers, John's podcast. Each of his podcast episodes are very valuable. You should listen to some of his episodes if you have the opportunity. In the near future, I'm going to be including some exciting information on my website, physiciansbeyondthebedside.com, and I'll also be mentioning this information in upcoming podcasts. This information will be very valuable to those of you who are interested in pursuing careers beyond the bedside. I think it will be something that you will be very interested in taking advantage of. Please stay tuned for more information in the next episode. As always, please take care of yourselves and good luck moving beyond the bedside.